The aging tech running so much of our lives. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. The programming language known as COBOL, which stands for Common Business Oriented Language, turns 65 this year. That, we couldn't help but notice, is right around retirement age, but COBOL is nowhere near retirement. It remains a mainstay of IT operations at government agencies, businesses, and financial institutions. And yet the programming language, which is older than the Beatles, is no longer taught at most universities. Tech journalist Glenn Fleischman has been writing about this. I asked him if our reliance on COBOL is a problem.
There was a point in the evolution of computers where they went from being devices that were barely interactive and the code was written at a very low level. You had to write each instruction and test things, and it was practically like wiring a machine. And then there was as computers became more powerful, but also as the people involved in computing understood better what they wanted out of computers, they wanted to be able to write in a higher level language. So when you looked at it, you could read the code and understand it. It wasn't just a bunch of numbers or abstracted instructions. So COBOL was the human readable-ish programming language that allowed business logic, so things that have to do with running your business or running the government, to be expressed in a way that someone else could also look at and understand and revise.
And you've written that six decades after its creation, you'd expect COBOL to be, quote, the stuff of looping narrative videos at computer history museums, which makes it all the more surprising that in real life, COBOL is still kind of everywhere.
I think in my naivete as a younger programmer, younger technology-focused person, I thought languages would die and they'd be replaced with better alternatives. But it turns out no language ever dies, and some of them are so deeply embedded, they're never going away. And COBOL's roots are so deep. It's the 100-foot-tall tree has 100 feet of roots underneath it. If you cut down the tree, all the roots are still there. It can't just be pulled out by hand. It has to be, it's an incredibly complicated and also unforgiving operation because there's no money to be made as a company running a COBOL system to stop using COBOL. It will cost you money to convert your code base. It might cost you millions or $1 billion. So there's not any motivation.
So it's one of those things that gets handed off to the next CEO or the next administration.
Yeah. And sometimes a chief technical officer will come in and say, oh my God, we're still running COBOL. We need to get rid of that. And then that will destroy that CTO. And then the next CTO comes in and says, I see what happened to my predecessor. We're not going to waste $27 million on a project that failed.
I mean, the extent to which this programming language is embedded in our lives is remarkable. I've seen that an estimated 70% of business transactions involve COBOL. Giant government agencies use it. I know for me, I actually learned about it during the pandemic when there were all these state employment departments around the country that couldn't handle the surge in unemployment claims. And it turned out those systems were all running on COBOL.
Yeah, it's there's a contextualization for it. Like, is it bad that COBOL is running most of the world's economy or a big chunk of the world's economic transactions? The answer is probably no, because it's COBOL is a very straightforward language in many ways, and the way it was written was very straightforward if done well. So as long as you have organizations that are processing millions or trillions of transactions, then they need systems that are optimized for that. And that is very weirdly COBOL plus a mainframe. There are still people growing up learning COBOL. There are still companies employing people. If you go to the Bank of New York Mellon, I was just looking them up to see, do they still have COBOL jobs? They did several years ago when I wrote an article. They do. They still have lots of COBOL jobs. And the conversion away from COBOL, you know, I think there's no way to get an accurate count because COBOL is mostly running in private companies or in government agencies that don't have disclosure requirements.
So probably these job listings are the one way you can really get visibility into this, because it sounds like nobody really wants to admit that they're still using systems that are running on it.
Well, it's kind of, it must seem embarrassing. I mean, you shouldn't be, gosh, there's so many things that people are no longer shamed for, and rightly not. And I think COBOL, maybe the last thing is, I think a company would not want to go out and in their annual report and say, we're proud to say we're still running 10 million lines of COBOL. That would probably make investors nervous, but there's nothing wrong with it. If everything's been reliable to date, then there's no reason why the reliability would change. The reliability would change if you convert from COBOL to another language and have to figure out all the logic. I mean, the Department of Defense's MOCAS system is 65 years old now, I think. It's moved from machine to machine to machine, but the code base has evolved. Imagine untangling 65 years of programming decisions and getting it right.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're back with tech journalist Glenn Fleischman. What are the benefits of sticking with COBOL if you are one of these financial firms or government agencies that's still running systems on it?
Well, it doesn't expire is the thing. Its knowledge is the issue, not the quality of the code. So code, if it's written well and it's working, won't necessarily break. It only breaks when it's changed. So there's no reason that COBOL can't continue to be a resilient language that's used for transaction processing. It's the brain power that's necessary to keep it running. So we've seen that in different fields where many people have retired in specific fields. They have very specific knowledge and you can't hire enough people for whatever because their expertise is not available. It's not on the market. But I think there is a sense along with progress that things degrade. And COBOL is not necessarily something that the language isn't rotting while it sits in a computer. It's just doing its thing.
You know, we've been covering AI so closely on our show lately. And as I was researching COBOL, it's kind of striking how the choices that are made at the ground floor of a lot of these technologies can stick for a very long time.
Yeah, there's a lot of assumptions that get built into everything. I mean, I think it's one of the lovely things about coding is that it's something that our brains can somehow do. We can model software in our heads. We can run code in our head and then produce it in a form that a computer can run. That's a miracle. I have no idea how that works. And most programmers I know, you run code in your head first, or you run little bits of it. Code was made to reflect a capability we have. So that means that all coding languages have to be built or were built with certain basic insights, basic foundations that have to match up with the human mind. So one thing that will happen with the introduction of these large language model AIs, but also future AI approaches, is that we may have computer languages that are incomprehensible to human beings because they don't arise from how our brains model things. They arise from how processes we don't understand because they actually produce themselves, the complexity out of themselves. If you look at 3D modeling, for instance, there's been some interesting transition. You can 3D print something, but you can feed a model into an optimizing AI, and it will produce a shape that no human would ever design, and no one would ever take a lathe out and create, but it's absolutely as good or even better and uses less material. And you can 3D print that. You can never make it by hand. You can never design it with your mind, but it's an optimal form for a part that a person conceived of. And I expect we'll see that with code too.
That was tech journalist Glenn Fleischman. There's big money being poured into exploring how developers might use AI to deal with the many problems that come from relying on legacy tech. Last fall, IBM launched its WatsonX.AI coding assistant. The service promises to cut down the time it takes to migrate code from COBOL to other programming languages, like Java, from several years to just one or two. But the Wall Street Journal reports WatsonX.AI will also help developers stick with COBOL and maintain those older systems, which IBM says businesses aren't getting rid of anytime soon. Links to that story are at marketplacetech.org. We've posted links to Glenn's musings on COBOL there, too. Rosie Hughes produced this episode. I'm Lily Jamali, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.